Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anything said on Hillbilly Broadcast should be taken only as opinion. Also, the views and opinions expressed by guests of the program that we interview do not necessarily reflect the views of the hosts of Hillbilly Broadcast or its advertisers.
Please remain calm. There is no need for alarm. This space is now being taken over by Hillbilly Broadcast.
Natalie, it's been just, about 2 years since we had you on the first time?
I believe so. At least that long.
Yeah, at least. I gotta thank you for that interview because that sent a lot of people our way that weren't listening before. And I think actually a lot of XCHM people found us because...
Oh, that's fun.
Brian Holness is the mothership. That's where we all kind of branch off of. And, so I think a lot of us were over there nosing around before we started any kind of project. Before we get really into anything, in case there's listening that don't know who you are, give us a little bit of your background and a little bit about Brian Holness.
Yeah, so I'm Natalie Edmondson, and I do not come from the CHM. I come from Holiness Pentecostalism, and it is different. it's independent churches, but anyways, I grew up in this fellowship. It's definitely my whole world. And I loved it while I was in it, but we had some teachings that I thought were really heaven or hell issues. And of course, I thought we were the only ones going to heaven, or if anyone else really was saved in a Baptist church or whatnot, that God would lead them into our group. So that was the mentality. And I thought that our unique teachings were heaven or hell issues. So when I knew some people that started to, specifically my brother Nathan, when he started to say, "Hey, I'm not sure these are biblical," it scared me to death. And I started deep dive studying into it to try to talk him back into faith so he wouldn't lose his soul. and these heaven or hell issues were things like, you know, can a woman wear makeup or a women's pants or even a wedding ring, because that's jewelry.
You're talking the fundamentals of the faith here.
Yeah, that was the fundamentals. but I say all that to say that when I realized that those things were not biblical, and I was studying in a very, very biased way to try to prove that they are biblical, but it was that study that made me realize they're not. So I stayed in the group anyways, but lived in a lot of cognitive dissonance as I went to their Bible school. And did really well in Bible school, and then went to the mission field and missions trips and serving in churches and helping to pioneer children's outreaches and just a lot of wonderful opportunities. But because of that way, the way that we thought, which I now refer to as hyperfundamentalism, and how we thought, you know, we're the best of the best, or maybe even the only Christian. It was just so exclusive and such a high control group. That's a more broad word that people might recognize, high control group, that you can't push back. There's lots of authoritarianism and just this kind of our way or the highway. So I was even too afraid to even just bring up that hey, I disagree on these issues. So I just really towed the line. But skipping way forward, when I finally had enough of a life crisis that I'm just looking around and looking at my mentors and my mission supporters and where I'm interning and my friends and family, and my whole world is this group. And I just wondered, am I fake, basically? Do they love me, or do they love this? What I started to feel was a facade that I was putting up for everyone. Not that I was outright lying, but that I was just, you know, towing the line, following every rule, and pretending kind of like we were the only Christians, even though, you know, the more Christians I met on the mission field and whatnot, the more I'm just like, doesn't even make sense anymore. Because, you know, you see these Christians, and especially in other countries, that are just doing amazing works, and, you know, people are getting saved and even healed, and the gospel's going forward, and it's just like, and they're all lost. I said, lots of cognitive dissonance. But when that crisis finally came, I privately confided in my leaders that, you know, hey, I'm willing to follow these standards, but I just want to be 100% with you. I can't find them in the Bible, and I think that other Christians are going to go to heaven too. And believe it or not, that was very controversial. And I just kind of lost everything, just my mentors and the people I'd been serving and working with, and, you know, had built up a great reputation such that they were praising me. All of a sudden, just didn't want anything to do with me. We're calling people up across the movement and saying, hey, don't let her come to your church. Don't let her, or at least don't let her work for you, or be careful, or keep your youth group away from her. Like, I just became all of a sudden this, well, to use one minister's words, backslidden reprobate. not because I did anything crazy, but because I said, hey, I just don't see this in the Bible.
Well, Natalie, you think about what message that sends to the other people in the congregation. So you were punished for your honesty. So if there's anybody else sitting there that doesn't agree, what they have been effectively told by those kind of actions is, we're going to keep our mouth shut, and we just got to fake it till we make it kind of deal here.
Exactly. So, yeah. So at first, I didn't realize how many other movements there are out there in groups that are very, very similar to the environment that I grew up in. The word that we use across the board for it is hyperfundamentalism, and that refers to a fear-driven, high-controlled distortion of Christianity characterized by extra-biblical requirements, authoritarianism, tribalism, and elitism. So when anyone, no matter what the group is, we've identified dozens of movements like this, from General Assembly and Church of the Firstborn to I think it's called New Testament Christian Church. And of course, you've got your Independent Fundamental Baptist. There are so many churches and groups that are infected by this mentality, this hyperfundamentalism. But the big problem is that it can wreck people's faith. Not only are the people who are growing up in it, isolated and given a very shallow version of Christianity, a version of Christianity that's so shallow that, you know, your idea of holiness is taking off your wedding ring, ironically.
Right.
So it's this very shallow, you're not being truly discipled, and you're not studying deeply into the word. You're not being taught to think for yourself. So it's not good for the people who are still in it. But the most danger can happen when you start to realize that it's not real. Because at that point, and I guess that's for the people who even find the gospel in it. So there are some groups, and I would say in my experience, I was a Christian. I was a true believer while I was in the group. But I guess I'm saying there are some people who are still believers, and they do come to find salvation while they're in these groups. And then the crisis and the real danger comes when they realize their groups was not telling the truth, that something's not true, and they start to experience the spiritual abuse and the shunning and the ostracization, and many people lose their faith. But now I actually should add that there are also many others who grow up in these groups, and what they're given is such a distorted version of Christianity that it's not Christianity at all.
Sure.
I've had dozens of people tell me that they did not get saved and find the gospel and find Jesus until they were on their way out of the group and researching what Christianity was. And that's when they found the gospel.
So this brings up something I had written down to mention to you. I find myself, the longer that I'm out of the CHM, I find myself like feeling more hostile towards these kind of groups because I feel that there's a very great danger there. And I was just curious, with you having so much more experience dealing with these different groups and talking to these different people, I mean, is that feeling of danger, is that correct?
For me, that's grown too. Yeah. When I first left, what I really wanted to do is just help our group more open to fellowshipping other denominations. But the more even that other denominations that, you know, I'm fellowshipping now that I tell them about this group, they're like, oh, wow, we would not want our young people anywhere near that. That sounds so toxic.
Right.
And so I'm starting to see, oh, okay, this is a lot more dangerous than I first believed. And also just now that I've interacted with literally thousands of people who are leaving these groups and sharing their stories, whether it's in a comment thread or the thousands who have reached out by a messenger or email or sometimes even in person with us, and I'm hearing all these stories, I'm starting to realize just on what a huge scale this hyper-fundamentalism is in affecting people's faith, distorting their view of God, distorting their view of themselves, and distorting their understanding of the gospel. Like I said, to the extent in some cases that they don't understand the gospel at all, and they are completely lost and apart from God, but killing themselves trying to be more religious and earn heaven.
Sure. And I'll tell you, one of the recent articles over there on Berean Holiness, really, you guys tend to have a very good way of putting things into words that I've wrestled with in my mind, but never really knew exactly how to say it out loud or even say it to myself. A lot of times I'll go over there and I'll read an article and be like, ah, there it is. That's kind of confirming what I'd felt. And one of the ones that really got me recently was talking about the whole, what was it? I'd rather make heaven by a mile than miss it by an inch or something like that. And that article, just in its entirety, really helped me to realize how works-based the CHM is. And Ben, you can probably speak to this as well. And I feel like just the more that I realize stuff like that, that's what really makes me get a lot more uptight about these kind of things and really want to push harder against them. Ben, have you had any kind of similar experience?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's nearly impossible to have a healthy relationship or a healthy view of God, to have any understanding of grace, because everything you're doing, it's salvation by works. No matter how much they protest and deny and dispute that fact, it is salvation by works. And then once you try to be so conservative, you know, it's a progressive step of there's no limit to how far you can go being more and more and more conservative. I mean, you end up looking like a Muslim woman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's when you're trying to earn your salvation, you can never have security. You can never be sure that you are saved and you have eternal life. And I think that's why they put so much emphasis on making it to heaven. It's because it's not even about eternal life. It's, oh, I've got to make it to heaven. And for the most part, they're just selling fire insurance.
Essentially, yeah. I can remember being at Clinton Camp, Ben, and I think my mom had got me a watch or something like that, and it was probably like a $10 one from Walmart. And it looked nice, and I liked it. But one of the preachers had been preaching about how, you know, liking things too much or whatever, and I remember just feeling like, can't have this watch. Got to get rid of this watch. And I can remember taking that watch off and putting it in the trash at that camp, and then somebody brought it back to me. Nobody saw me put it in the trash. Somebody brought it back to me, which in my mind was the devil's tempting me with his watch that God doesn't want me to have. So I threw it away again, you know, but it was just, you know, all this kind of stuff of, for me to be a good Christian, I had to do this and do this.
Well, there couldn't be anything wrong with a watch because that's the CHM engagement ring.
True. Very true.
And I always had those fears too. I was always scared. Anything I enjoyed, I'm like, oh, God's going to ask me to give this up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't a lot I did that I enjoyed because it was so much it was off limits. But, you know, I was always afraid. And actually, I had a brother, my brother that was a TBI for a while, that at one point he felt like he had to give up deer hunting because, you know, he loved it too much and God asked him to give it up. Thankfully, he got over that after a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember just that being afraid of liking something too much because God was going to tell you that you love this more than me.
Yep.
Well, and we're also kind of taught, depending on the group, that our impulsive thought is God speaking. We haven't learned to study his word and apply the word. So if, you know, we're just supposed to, it's a very emotion based, it's very feeling based. So if a thought pops into our head, oh, I should give up, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever it is, then you start to think, was that Holy Ghost conviction?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm going off topic because I'd kind of gone off topic because you were in the middle of telling us about yourself. But I there's another thing that I thought about kind of in this regard as well. When you have these preachers that would say that God told them to say something, because I remember, Ben, you probably remember as well, it was just a understanding that before the preacher came up and preached, he had talked to God. God told him, you need to preach this. And a lot of times, for each specific night, that was my understanding. I could have been...
it's what they told us.
I don't remember anybody specifically say that to me, but I learned it somewhere. I figured it out somewhere. So then when these guys, they'd go off preaching all this crazy stuff, but really my main point is, if you have somebody that is saying that God told them to say something that's not in the Bible, because all that stuff, so much of that stuff we heard is not there, what's the difference between that and a Joseph Smith situation when you really get down to it?
Nothing. That's the danger of going off and preaching and beyond the Bible, preaching the church manual, preaching your own personal feelings. I don't even know if I'm so skeptical of personal convictions, man. You know, it's really interesting that everyone that shows up to a certain building once a week or twice or three or five times a week, all picked up the same personal conviction.
Yeah, for sure. I've noticed that as well.
God really dealt with them about, the skirts being exactly 4 inches off the ground and sleeves, not just 3/4 length, but all the way to the wrist.
And yeah.
Hair never trimmed or, I guess the sleeves on the man, there's not that many things that apply to the man, maybe long sleeves, long pants, but not those. What did that guy call them recently? Knee pants?
His little knee pants?
Yeah,
those are ungodly as far as I'm concerned.
Old Don Van Zandt's knee pants. Yeah. Natalie, it seems that Berean Holiness over the past few years has went through quite a bit of growth. I mean, it's just me from the outside looking in, but is that true?
Yeah. Well, and especially because we became a nonprofit as of last year. So that's a whole nother level of challenge, but also growth.
I was just looking there a little bit ago at the clip where you'd shared of Bob Bolas. And I think I saw like 13,000 views on Facebook. Like that does me good because that just the reach that your page, that your organization is getting, there's so many people. And I tend to just look at the CHM because that's what I know. But you mentioned that. How many did you say that you had identified as far as these high control groups?
Oh, I just said dozens.
Okay,
so, I have a running list, but sure. Yeah, it's a lot. I don't know them all.
So that, I just think about the CHM and I realize, but Ben, I think me and you've talked about this, that when you then look at the like the Independent Fundamental Baptists and all that, the CHM is a small, small part of these high control groups.
And oh, yeah.
So it's really good to see that you're getting that kind of reach and that you're able to reach out to these other people that are struggling with this kind of stuff.
I'll just mention that we've actually been intentional about not reaching people for about the last year. And the reason for that has been because of our capacity. We reached too many people in 2023, the end of the year especially, And so we had, for example, community groups, and they were very gospel focused. We're helping people, especially some of them were tailored specifically to Oneness Pentecostals, the group that denies the Trinity, says you have to speak in tongues to be saved, this kind of thing. And we tailored these resources to them, but there were so many people who wanted to hear about the biblical gospel versus what they were taught that we were having to turn away over a dozen people. And that's with very minimal advertising for that group. So that really bothered me a lot. And it bothered our other team members too. And so as we thought about, okay, what are we going to do? And then I'll add that in the middle of that, we were pushing our social media a lot for a couple months, and just like 1 or 2 months of very intentional social media work on Instagram. And we reached a couple million people in a very short window of time. Yeah. And when you're reaching millions of people in a matter of weeks, you have hundreds of messages in about that same time frame. And a lot of those messages are people who say, you know, we need help. Our lives are in crisis. We're trying to leave, or we're not sure what to do, or I'm considering giving up on Christianity entirely. And there were even, so we'd already run into this problem before where it's too many messages for me to answer. So we were able to hire Megan, and she's been amazing, helping us answer just about everyone who reaches out. But then so many people were reaching out, and I didn't feel like we had enough depth of resources for them. And then especially because we maxed out our groups and this kind of stuff. So we had to really sit back and consider, okay, how are we going to build the infrastructure of the organization such that we can hire enough people to have all the teachers, podcasters, videographers, editors, writers, you know, from bookkeepers to event coordinators, communication, administration, development. There are so many roles that they could be full-time jobs. There's enough need that we could build a nonprofit with full-time positions for all of these order to reach all the people and truly help all the people who we could reach if we, you know, even were purposely and intentionally trying to reach new people. So, yeah, the need's pretty overwhelming. So we've had to take a big step back most all of 2024 and try not to grow too much, just so the skeleton crew that we have at this point can work on the infrastructure and the development needed to raise the funds to be able to hire the team that would be required to meet the actual need that's out there.
Why do you think it is that it's taken this long for something like Berean Holiness to come along?
You know, that is a question I ask myself. And I asked Nathan, who, you know, helped me co-founded, now our board chairman. We were talking about it a few months ago. But I think number one, I think it requires the internet to some extent in order to have the massive reach that we've found that we're capable of or could be capable of. So to some extent, the technology, social media, the internet, I think that's what's made this all possible. And we know that's only been the last 10, 20 years that, you know, all this new technology has really been widespread.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, so that's the first part, that kind of that time frame, that window. But then within that, I think they're just, I mean, number one, you've got so many people who leave these groups, who leave faith. And then two, you have many people who leave these groups and they actually, some just want to just, you know, they're healing, they've gone through a lot and they do not want to spend time dealing with cult leaders. That just sounds like a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But then there are some people who are amazing who do, people who start podcasts, people who start Facebook groups, or social media pages. But the issue is a lot of times it's just one person doing it and it's all volunteer. And if it's a man, then they have a full-time job and they're trying to do this on the side. Or if it's a lady, then she goes on to get married and have kids and she's, you know, trying to run a Instagram page or something on the side.
Sure.
And a lot of times it's just not sustainable. And there's so much need that to really do everything to answer the messages and to grow and to continue and to do it for years. You have to have a team, and you have to have a team that is paid, honestly, because doing it in your free time, it's never going to take off and be sustainable. So I really wish someone would have taken time and built a nonprofit before now. But my brother, one of his favorite quotes is something along the lines of, if it was easy, someone else would have already done it. And I think that's part of the reason it hasn't been done before.
Yeah, I think the social media thing too is that's what it's taken to force to be able to broadcast some of the stuff these guys say too. Because before the whole live streaming thing went popular, which a lot of that grew during COVID,
right?
It was only just hearsay and stuff we could remember. Whereas now it's on record, some of the things that they preach and say.
I would add one point to that, that it's also a problem as old as time. I forget the verse, but I sought for a man to stand in the gap and I found none. And a lot of times the most capable people and the people that God would like to use aren't willing. And you see some of these people that have left and then they go in and they've got they're mainstream Christians now, but they will not touch on critiquing or criticizing what they left.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, some of y'all I think are just cowards, that you want to not burn bridges, but you want to maintain friendly relations, but you have a responsibility to helping the people that are in the position that you were in. But I think this kind of goes along with it, Natalie. What's your take on the amount of devastation and trauma that is left in the wake of these high control groups? You know, the people, in there, that they'll be like, look at the world. The world has so many problems. The world has so much abuse. They have so many mental health issues and whatnot. And that's true. But these people that supposedly they all the little different factions think they are the one true way to get to heaven. And they're the ones that have the full light and all the other little sayings they have. But man, these people that are messaging and reaching out to you, and the messes that they have and the confusion and whatnot, if you would talk on that a little bit.
Yeah, well, one of the words that I've seen quite a bit is the word desperate. When they realize that something they've been told doesn't line up with scripture, for example, teaching that you have to wear long sleeves or that jewelry is wrong. Even these petty things, as some people call them, and I wish they could be, but they've been made essentials of the faith. When people realize that, wait, that's not biblical, they send them into a crisis. But especially when they know, I've been doing some interviews lately, some story interviews with people who are giving me total permission to share. And I really, really appreciate that. But one of the ladies I was talking to yesterday, I asked her, what would it mean for you to leave your group? Of course, she already did 5 years ago. But what was she facing? And she said, I knew if I left, we were going to lose everyone. We were going to lose our friends. We were going to lose our support system. And of course, their leaders and mentors. And she said, we were even going to lose our family, to the extent, because of the way her group was, which was General Assembly and Church of the Firstborn. It's a cult that started in Oklahoma. Another holiness kind of spinoff. She said that, they're not going to be invited to weddings anymore. They're not going to be invited to Thanksgiving or Christmas anymore. That's not an extreme that I personally experience, but it is the reality for others, such that your whole world, and especially losing your identity. And I think that even those of us who come from less extreme fellowships, we can relate to that feeling of sense of losing all our identity. But the thing is, It's like, okay, well, they could just stay in the group. They don't have to leave and lose everything. But if you stay in the group, then you have to, like my experience, you're forced to be fake. Once you realize that something isn't biblical,
yeah,
then you are just submitting yourself to the dictatorship at that point, because it's not your personal conviction. You're just submitting yourself to the high control and the rules and the authoritarianism, and you're losing yourself. You are, you're there in just trying to be whatever the group wants you to be. And you know, especially how fickle some of these groups can be, such that you have to be so careful not to cross the line and yourself ousted. And so it's fragile. You're walking on thin ice all the time. But even if you believe everything, okay, well, then we have the trauma of you believe God is out to get you, depending on how seriously you take all their teaching. But if you take it all to heart and you're worried that the length of your sleeves determines God's favor, it's a horrible, distorted view of Christianity that just, it's draining and it causes despair. The other people I was talking to just yesterday was talking about so many times she considered suicide because it sounded better than trying to please her leaders, and even worse, trying to please God that she could not figure out how to please. And she answered the question, I asked her, how did she view God? And she said, quote, I viewed God as manipulative and cruel, setting expectations that were virtually impossible to achieve. And I asked her, how'd you view yourself? And she said, as a failure. I felt unable to fit into the group. I felt that this failure was primarily on my part. And she, you know, she had an abusive marriage, very abusive, even physically. And she said, I knew that if I got divorced, I could never marry again and be right with God. And that was like a teen marriage. She says she felt convinced I could not go to heaven. And so I should just try to live as good a life as possible and at least have some happiness, if possible, before death. And she's the second person who gave that answer this week of they gave up. And so they tried to just enjoy sin because they knew they were going to hell and there was nothing they could do about it.
Oh, boy. That's what gets me about these things. Sometimes we'll get the response of, somebody just said the other day, somebody that's not in the CHM these days, but like you mentioned earlier, Ben, about these people that leave but don't want to cross what they came out of. And they said, well, you got to be careful of these people that just have a bone to pick with the CHM. And it's like, okay, when you say that, I know what you're trying to do. But then when you hear stories like what you just said, Natalie, or you hear about somebody that was sexually abused, or, you know, somebody that gave up their faith, or somebody that just thinks they're bound for hell, it's like, yeah, I've got a little bit of an issue with them, and I don't understand why you don't either.
How could right. you not have a bone to pick with them when yes. you see the damage? When you talk to the people, that were abused 30 and 40 years ago, and they don't go a day without it going across their mind. When you see how these people defend their own. That IFB preacher that just this week was convicted, or no, he wasn't convicted. I think he was indicted for crimes against a minor. He took his own life because he's a coward. But, you know, there's all these people are making comments defending, oh, he's a good man of God. It's just the pressure and all this, mm-hmm. you know. Come on, man. They can't even be honest with each other, let alone themselves.
Yeah.
How could you not have a bone to pick with them? If you care about people at all, you're going to have some, I'll use their words, righteous indignation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Some of the stories I've heard, Ben, have almost literally turned my hair white.
Yep.
And those, I'm sure, pale in comparison to what you've heard, Natalie. So, yeah, I got a bone to pick. Absolutely.
Especially because females are going to feel much more comfortable talking to her than... Yes. any of us, and rightfully so.
Yep.
But it never ceases to amaze me how many of the boys in these groups have also been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the amount of times that you hear these stories, and there's hardly ever a happy ending to them as far as like some sense of justice or something like that. It just, it seems like it very rarely happens. Something else.
Even when justice is served, the people in the group still believe they're innocent because he was a man of God, because they put a man on a pedestal. He's just a man. You can call it a calling. You can call it whatever you want. That is a fallible man. And when you set him up, it's just like the lady that was being abused in her marriage. Well, her husband, it feels, you know, free to do whatever he wants because he knows she cannot divorce him and keep any of her community. She's going to be the bad person, and she can never have another relationship or pursue happiness ever again in her life. She's stuck with him, so, you know, he's a bad guy, so he abuses his position.
Mm-hmm. You both just touched on this. You think about how that whole system, and I can talk about from what I know, and I'm assuming it's similar with a lot of these groups, that whole social system, our whole social makeup is based completely around that church. You know, we went to church 3 times a week because we were told to, under threat of missing heaven. Things that happened in the normal community were sin. Like, I couldn't go to high school football games. You couldn't, if you were a student, you couldn't play on the team. You couldn't develop those friendships, stuff like that. Nope. You know, if there's any kind of school dance, that was out, you know, things. So a lot of things in especially rural communities that bind you together as a community, those were sin. So your entire social network was based around the church. And then when you leave, it's just gone.
You're a lost puppy.
Yes.
You know, what's interesting. So I listened to a holiness preacher the other day say that in Maine, specifically, in the entire state of Maine, there are only 3 holiness churches that can be fellowship. And he was going on about how, you know, that's so sad, and we need to start new churches so that there are more than 3 churches that those poor people can visit. Because, I mean, I guess if you go to one of them, you really only have 2. Well, I was sitting here, and I started to think, you know, why do I never think about that anymore? When growing up, at least in the Holiness Pentecostal service, like churches and circles, it was a really big deal. Like, who can we fellowship? Where can we fellowship? And we would go to other churches' revivals and go to their camp meetings and go to their youth camps on top of our camp meetings, revivals, and youth camps. It was like a really big deal. Where can we fellowship? And so as I was, you know, listening to this minister talk about how hard it would be to live in a state with only 3 churches, that.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I thought to myself, why does that not matter anymore like it used to? And I realized, oh, that's because my world is so much bigger now. Back in the day, the only people in my life that I really had in my life, especially that I could get close to, had to be holiness, independent, Pentecostal, Trinitarian. So, you know, how many churches are in your state and how many people in those churches, that's basically how many people you can have in your little world, at least, that you can let in and get close to.
Absolutely. I can remember how they all used to make fun of Jeff Gordon. Because Jeff Gordon, I don't know, he'd said something about being born again. And I remember everybody used to laugh and make it, born again race car driver. You know, just writing people off like that. And now it's...
Driving his car on Sunday.
Yeah,
he's a sinner.
Yeah.
Because he's out there racing and making money on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, it just a lot of those public figures, you know, like Tim Tebow or Gary from Rascal Flatts, one of these guys that are, you know, they're believers, used to just write them off just like that.
Well, they didn't go to our little association, you know, and it's funny, you know, our groups and Natalie's groups would never associate with each other, even though they're so similar,
right?
Because, you know, everybody's a heretic. And it, I'm telling you, it's hard for a lot of people to leave that behind when they get out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in a group, and I think it's mostly fundamentalist Baptist ex guys or whatever. And I don't even know what these two guys were arguing. But when they got done, they had both told each other that the other one was not saved. And I mean, they both damned each other to hell. And I don't know. Nobody won that argument. They both lost. I decided both of them were clowns that had no clue about what being a Christ follower is at all. And I don't know what either one of them was arguing. I just know they're both clowns, man. God, they have not left the behavior behind.
Yeah.
It's really hard to leave the behavior behind. It's years often of disentangling and thinking about, okay, how was I raised to treat people, and how was I raised to view God, and again, viewing yourself and viewing the gospel and viewing others. Like, all of this we have to learn to rethink and redo and refind our identity. Like, it's a huge process. It's overwhelming. That's what we hear all the time. People write in and say, I'm overwhelmed. There's so much to rebuild. And of course, if you just try to push it all out of your mind and be like, okay, I want to be done with this group. I don't want to think about this anymore. A lot of times you might be able to move to another church if you're courageous enough to try one of those compromised liberal backsliding mainstream Baptist churches or something, as they were called back in the day. But anyways, so you, even if you find the courage to go to another church, if you don't disentangle, you'll be 30 years down the road and still, you know, have a hyper-fundamentalist mindset, still be disfellowshipping people over the most minimal thing. And that's why that process of disentangling is so important, to very intentionally study the word, rebuild, rethink, you know, look inside and do a lot of work on ourselves. And I think that's why the resources and the community and the help to do that is so important, because it's a lot.
Let's switch gears for a minute here. Ben has an idea. Me and him talked about this. He laughed already. Ben tells me that he believes that skirts are immodest, and this kind of. So we were talking about modesty and what the actual definition of modesty is. Ben, I'll let you state your point, and we'll get Natalie's thoughts on this.
Well, you know, properly covered and whatever is that, you know, that the skirts can be modest, but the assumption in these groups is wearing pants is immodest. And at first I kind of rolled this around in my head and I was like, okay, I notice women in skirts much more often than women in pants or shorts. You know, women in pants or shorts that just blend in with their surroundings, you don't really notice them. They're everywhere. Woman in a skirt, especially these big, long, flowy skirts, you notice. Okay, at first I was like, well, maybe that's because of my upbringing. You know, I'm looking, seeing as that's somebody I know. And kind of talked to a lot of different guys about it that are not from XCHM background, some that are. And I've just become more and more convinced of this, and noticing when you're out in public, women in skirts draw more attention to themselves, because my unscientific diagnosis is the fabric moves in an unnatural motion. When you have pants on a woman or man, I mean, a man in a skirt definitely is immodest and draws a lot of attention. But, you know, that's where we are in 2024. But the skirt swishes back and forth, you know, the fabric kind of pulls in and just makes noise sometimes. Whereas, you know, the pants move with the natural flow of the leg and the stride. And so that's where I'm at. And I can be the only one decides that, but I just find it hilarious that these groups naturally assume that any woman in pants is immodest, which is insanity. But I've come all the way around to, you know, a skirt is far more immodest because, you know, modesty is blending in. It is being essentially, another word is humble and not flashy, not showy. And I mean, the CHM women aren't as bad as the Pentecostal women, but the Pentecostal women absolutely draw a lot of attention to themselves with their hairdos. And
the Pentecostal hairdo was apparel. Much more flamboyant.
But, you know, and we do, at least, and we do have some in the CHM that like to wear big flower lapel deals that are probably not modest either. But I, you know, especially with modern dress and everything, a woman in a skirt draws attention that a woman in pants or shorts does not.
So give us your take, Natalie, about modesty and whether Ben's completely off track here.
Well, he just totally redefined modesty from what I grew up with.
Yeah.
I was told that we were called to be separate. And I went to a church service actually not far from here just a few years ago. And walked in and they were getting all hyped up and exhorting the congregation and saying how proud they were of their young people being such a light and a witness to a dark world. And the minister said, how are they a light? They're a light by the way they dress, because it stands out. So yeah, modesty was I guess, kind of whatever the church told you was modest. Because I also know of churches that there's a lady who was convicted. She felt to wear a veil, and she was told she wasn't allowed to do that because that drew attention. So then they changed the definition. But when it's long jean skirt, no, modesty is standing out and being separate and being different and being spotted from a mile away and people saying, those people are Christians, obviously, because long skirt. But funny enough, like a year ago, the long jean skirts came back into style. And I don't know if it was modest to wear them then, because I don't know how much we were standing out.
Good point. It's always about standing out. I just talked to somebody the other day. We were talking about how, actually it was John Baker. And he was mentioning about how the CHM lets society determine their salvation. So what society starts doing, then they have to do the opposite. For instance, with the, you know, when hippies come about and start having beards, all of a sudden the CHM couldn't have beards no more. Even though a lot of these old time preachers that they looked up to, like Charles Spurgeon, who, you know, was kind of a Calvinist. I don't know why they fell for him, because yeah, that was completely against what they were for. You know, he had the beard. He even smoked cigars, all this kind of stuff. But when the hippies brought the beard in, all of a sudden that was a sin and a shame. Now, never mind that a good holiness preacher, especially the Alleghenies, at one point they were kind of known for black suit, black tie, white shirt. Never mind they dressed like some of the most evil people in history. You know, some of these evil politicians or lawyers or whatever, you know, some of these guys that just, that didn't matter. It was some reason the hippies were what we had to steer against. And I remember I heard a guy a while back, he's actually a CHM preacher still there, but he was talking about this kind of thing. He said, we're preaching against bobby socks, which came in the 50s, that we're still preaching against them, and nobody knows what bobby socks are. So I think that, yeah, the definition of modesty, because like me and Ben were talking, when somebody tells you they had a modest upbringing, you think of not flashy, you know, not real flamboyant, not extremely wealthy. It's kind of a plain Jane upbringing. But for some reason, that didn't really, you know, we'd have preachers preaching about costly apparel as they were wearing a fancy 3-piece suit or something like that, which would cost way more than my wedding band. So Ben, you might be onto something. I don't know.
Well, I did notice that Natalie skirted that. She talked about the definition of modesty. She didn't tell me I was crazy, but she's definitely not ready to say skirts are immodest.
Yeah. I'm wearing a jean skirt right now.
She says she's wearing a jean skirt, dude. We can't. She doesn't have the light you do yet, Ben. You know how that goes.
we're not going there, Phil. we're not going to say that Ben Wyford's got any extra light or full light. No, I repudiate that remark.
So, Natalie, before I had you on, I put up a post in our Facebook group, which is the Fraternal Order of Hillbilly Broadcast, and I asked people if they had anything that they would want me to ask you. And overwhelmingly... overwhelmingly they said Saint Joan. They said, when is she going, let me put it this way, one person said, when is she going to block you know who? Said, ask her that, that's what we all really want to know. I actually had multiple people ask me about the specific commenter that you have at Brian Holden's, and if you feel comfortable addressed it publicly.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad that you asked, because I am tired of people writing in and asking and copying and pasting. I think you also appreciate that we have had people from the CHM write in and ask us to please block her.
Oh my.
I'm sure you have.
Yes.
She makes them look terrible.
That's in softer words, that's literally what was said. That they said that she made them look bad. And I thought to myself, and you think I have sympathy, way to appeal to me. No, if she actually misrepresented them, I would want to be fair. And I don't know what I do in that situation. But like I told one person from the CHM who wrote in, and that was their complaint, I don't think she does misrepresent them.
Correct.
I know sometimes, but she, sometimes she might differ, but from what other people have heard, but I think that's kind of normal. They're not all exactly on the same page on everything. But overall, I don't feel like she's misrepresenting them. I've heard most of the arguments that she brings up, and I'm actually glad that she takes time, lots of time, to articulate the CHM argument and share the other side of the story or other side of the debate with everyone, because that's actually how Berean Holiness started. We've moved away from that, especially as I've come to, you know, see how many people need faith-based resources and need help leaving. We focus more on that now. But originally, I really wanted a forum that both sides were allowed to share both sides of the argument and debate about these biblical issues, especially, okay, what is holiness? And does the Bible require us to follow these standards? And is there just these small little groups that are the only ones going to heaven? I wanted to discuss all this openly. When I shared that I differed on holiness standards, I would have expected the people who poured into me for years to take at least a half an hour and want to talk to me about, you know, well, why do you disagree with this? But it was the polar opposite, with maybe one or two exceptions. Everyone would just, okay, when we don't talk anymore. And I don't mean just my peers. I mean my mentors. I mean, you know, people that I had served under and served with just did not. It was just a cold, okay, if you don't agree with holiness standards, then we're not friends. We don't talk. We don't anything. And they definitely didn't want to even discuss with me our differences, which, of course, was very frustrating to me as someone who at the time wanted to stay part of the group, wanted to continue fellowshipping the group. Wanted to be seen as a fellow believer, but instead I was just told, nope, you're a reprobate. We don't discuss the Bible with you. And that was extremely disheartening. So originally we started the Brian Holiness with the hope that, okay, Nathan and I will share one side of the debate. We'll share our studies. We'll share what we see in scripture, and we want holiness ministers to refute it. And we opened it up and said, would you please send us rebuttals? Would you please debunk these arguments? And we'll see where what the truth is, really, because truth stands on our own two feet. You should be able to read two sides and people thinking for themselves, look, okay, which side has more logic? Which side has exegeted the text better? Which side is more accurately portraying history? And fact check. And I wanted to have both sides so that people could think for themselves and decide what's the truth. So anyways, that was the original idea 5 years ago. Long story short, we had very, 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 very few ministers who wanted to engage with us at all. Most just wanted to preach against us, tell people not to, that they weren't allowed to read our articles. Basically, no one wanted to write a rebuttal. And I was just shut down. But after my experience of being shut down in silence, I am just so hesitant to do that to anyone else.
Sure.
But especially when I think that they're doing us more good than harm.
Absolutely.
And honestly, I think if we had a one-sided platform, if we ended the public discussion tomorrow and said, okay, from now on, only we can talk. Nobody from one of these hyper-fundamentalist groups can respond. Then the people who are still in those groups and considering leaving, they could look up our page, read our stuff, and wonder, is this true? Are they misrepresenting them? Are they twisting their words? Are they taking things out of context? But because we do have these public comment sections, the holiness people can come and defend themselves. They can say, no, that was out of context. Here's the context.
Yep.
They can say, you misquoted history here. Look at this part of history that you missed. And we don't delete those comments. We leave them all up. And so the idea is that the people who are on the fence can read both sides, let the holiness people, you know, defend themselves, let them put out their arguments, let them respond if they're willing to respond, and let truth stand on our own two feet. And we have seen tremendously that the people who are on the fence, after reading both sides, a lot of times end up writing in and saying, wow, reading the holiness arguments that are responding to you and the commenters responding to you makes us feel like you have a stronger case than we even realized before.
I agree with you 100% on your approach to that lever there. So many times she says the quiet stuff out loud, you know, the things that a lot of the other CHM people don't like to put into words. And I think overwhelmingly she does a greater service for people on our side than for the other side.
Yeah, because as long as they don't comment, and in my movement, some preachers have been telling people they're not allowed to comment on Berean holiness. And seriously, it's not an isolated incident either. But I think they're taking that strategy now because they want to just be able to say that they're misrepresented. They want to just be able to say all that stuff is bogus. They don't want to interact with it. It's much easier to just try to discredit the people. That's why they use a lot of personal attacks against me and other authors.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, because it's much easier to the name calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just saying we're reprobate and saying we're wolves in sheep's clothing and just stay away and they're lying to you and it's all bogus and it's of the devil. That's so much easier than interacting with the arguments and responding to the biblical text and trying to actually prove their points from scripture, which is something they don't have to do in their isolated bubbles. And we're trying to push them to try to do that so that it'll be more obvious what the truth is.
Absolutely. Now, I think it's important for people to remember, too, that Joan is not some fringe element of the CHM. You know, she's the wife of a very, very prominent CHM evangelist. So it's not like we got some somebody that's out in left field, you know, some dude that's holed up in the mountain somewhere just spouting off some crazy stuff. This lady's, you know, she's in the big circles. You know, she's around a lot of the big influences. So I think, and I do, it is very funny that the CHM people have written and asked you to banner because that's It doesn't give them a good look.
I think it's funny that the wolves in shepherd's clothing are telling their followers to not comment. Who are they to tell their people what they can and can't do? You know, that's a problem when you put a man on a pedestal and, he's responsible for getting you to heaven. I'm sorry, that's not biblical either. Trying to tell that you micromanage your followers' lives by what they can and cannot comment on Facebook. I agree. The echo chamber is a bad idea. I just have a problem with the amount of people that are blocked, me included, and the comments that get deleted by her. Because then it really takes away from some of these conversations, and it makes people look like they're talking to themselves when I don't know if she deletes the comments or it's at night when her husband goes in and edits and deletes comments, which is what we have been from reliable sources told that's what happened. He has to, you know, go through. And I mean, he did say from the platform that, you know, everything she writes, that, you know, he oversees it.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. You know, he did say that from a platform a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, because he's commented on her Facebook activity multiple times in a sermon. But that's the only, and that's out of your control as to who she blocks and what she deletes. But that's the only.
She blocked me early on too, Ben, and I don't even, I had a very mild interaction with her. So I don't know. Apparently there's a lot of us on that list. I don't know.
How is Phil Bishop not blocked?
Phil should be number one on that list.
I don't know what and then that's a whole nother story that you guys should have him come on and talk about his interaction with her husband recently.
Yeah.
It's hard to have any respect for that man.
Natalie, I had one more question from a listener. They said, can she set up a public debate between Jim Plank and Glenn Asbury, who's our Catholic buddy, to defend their positions? I'm guessing that's a strong no. I don't know if you got a lot of connections in the Plank camp.
I have had three or four of them reach out to us. So I've got their email addresses and their...
I'm guessing that's not the foreseeable future.
Probably not. Though I would be interested in watching that.
I would too. I would honestly. I need to try to reach out to people. I'd like to have somebody from the CHM in a non-hostile interview. I would commit to that to them. I'd honestly just like to talk to them, but I don't know that would happen. As we're winding down here, Natalie, I want to know, you know, do you got anything, some new stuff on the horizon? You know, what's next for Brian Holiness? Anything people need to look out for? And also, will we, at some point, do you think we'll see another Brian Holiness conference?
Good questions. So I would love to have another conference. I would love to have annual conferences. But doing one conference, I very quickly learned why most people don't do them. It absolutely wiped me out. It was hundreds and hundreds of hours work. It was exhausting. The week of the conference was three sleepless nights for me as I worked all day, worked all night, worked the next day. And at the end of the conference, and I hope this wasn't too evident during the conference, but by the end of it, like I kind of hated the world. I just wanted to go live in a cave and not see humans anymore. And it's not because anyone was awful. I mean, we did have one person show up.
And pick it. We did.
That was an interesting experience. But besides that, everyone was great. It was just so much work and so much stress that I realized if we tried to do this again, on the back of volunteer work, and I was a volunteer at the time, and everyone else who helped was volunteer, we would just all burn out and Brian Holiness would end. And actually Brian Holiness also got extremely behind because the conference was so much work that I wasn't able to the people who are reaching out in crisis, not because I didn't want to, but because there are dozens and dozens and dozens of people who would reach out, and you can't keep up with all those emails and messages and all the back work and administration and try to you know, plan a whole out-of-state conference, 2 days, you know, 100-plus people. It's just too much. We actually got a year behind in bookkeeping, which is all caught up now. But we were just kind of drowning.
Yeah.
Like, our donors weren't being thanked. We weren't following up on stuff. We didn't have the systems we needed. So that was part of the big, okay, we've got to step back. We've got to build infrastructure. So out of that, definitely realized that volunteers can't do everything. Volunteers are amazing people with huge hearts, but it's just not sustainable to ask for anyone to do 30 hours of work every week.
Yeah.
You just can't. So in order to have a conference again and keep up with the bookkeeping and the back work and the support and the social media and the community groups and everything else that we would love to do, we have to have a staff team. So that's what we're working on right now. It's just a bunch of funding, bunch of fundraising, just trying to figure out that whole side of the nonprofit world, because I don't have experience in this side of the nonprofit. So it's been a fun learning curve this year. But yeah, when you hire people, even if you pay them not lavishly at all, you still need tens of thousands of dollars. So yeah, that's been fun working to raise that this year. Yeah. And it's been a huge, huge project. But I'm really excited to think about what our capacity will be when we do have the budget that we need to be able to hire the staff that we need to be able to have the event coordinator and the group leader and the person full-time writing curriculum and the person, you know, working on content full-time. That'll be amazing.
Oh yeah.
And is what's crazy to me and what I find incredibly encouraging is the return on investment. Because think of it this way. How much money does it take to keep millions of people in these high control groups, from Mormonism to the, you know, the really strict IFB churches, the churches that I grew up in, to the Oneness Pentecostalism? I mean, Oneness Pentecostalism has maybe 30 million members by itself. And again, that's the group that believes you have to speak in tongues to be saved. So think about how many groups, toxic, unhealthy, teaching unbiblical things, how many groups like this are out there, how much money it takes to fund them all. Think about how many paid staff do all these groups have? Because, I mean, if you just have even one pastor per church, and you've got millions of people. I mean, just in the one group, there's millions. So you've got hundreds of thousands of paid staff working full-time jobs to try to keep people in these isolated, unhealthy, even toxic and cultish churches, depending how extreme the individual church is. But even if we had 5 to 10 people who were paid full-time to work at a nonprofit that reaches and is able to teach the gospel to people who are leaving, who want support and faith-based resources, just 5 to 10. Honestly, I think there would be thousands of the cultish and toxic leaders who would be scared, because just a very small team like that could do so much.
Yes.
I already know, because I've seen what can
They're
be done
already
with just
scared.
A few hours of volunteer work.
Yep.
It's incredible.
And you got so much free advertising, you know? All you have to do is post a video here and there of them in their own words for something they put out for public consumption, and then they get irritated by it, and they can't keep your name out of their mouth. So then they just send more and more of their people to go looking, and you can't pay for that free advertising. It's invaluable.
Every time they say the name, that definitely points people your direction.
No, if we had a full-time person just working on social media, that was their job, like a lot of companies do, we'd reach millions of people no problem. And part of the reason is because, they absolutely help.
Yes.
They help our cause.
Yes, indeed. Natalie, I want to tell you that Berean Holiness has made a big difference in my life. You guys were some of the ones that came up when I was searching some of these specific issues. I'd go on and Google something. I forget what it was. And you guys popped up. So you really helped me out when I was thinking about some of these things. And I can't, I'm sure that, I mean, there's countless others that you've done the same. So I think it's a very worthy cause. And I encourage you guys to keep up the good work. If people want to support Berean Holiness and what y'all are doing, how can they do that?
BereanHoliness.com/give. It will take you to our giving page. And if there's anyone who would be interested in giving a larger gift or helping us fund a staff member, I would be happy to meet with them in person if I could, but at least a video call, and they just have to reach out and let me know.
That sounds good. Ben, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, the problem with the funds is you're dealing with people that have come from backgrounds where they've been discouraged in getting a secular education and getting into some higher paid jobs. There's some that make money, but there's a lot of people from those backgrounds that don't do that well. I've got one question that I wanted to get in that you've got some experience and maybe you can give a short response to it, Natalie, but what do you think about after being out this long of speaking in tongues?
Oh, short question.
Man, he's finishing with the hard one. My gosh.
Oh my. Yeah. So how do I make that a short answer? Well, long story short, I will say that I see in the Bible that speaking in tongues, because KJV is where we get tongues from, right?
Yep.
If you're just reading, it, honestly, if you even know what the word tongue meant 400 years ago, you'd understand that it's just language. It's just speaking in a language that you don't know. And I have heard some incredible stories. One was about a missionary, and he went to some remote part of the world, and there was a man that he really felt like he needed to share the gospel with. He was so burdened to share the gospel with him, but he didn't speak his dialect. But even so, he could not get away from it. So he went over and shared the gospel in English, even though he didn't know the man's dialect. Well, they had a whole conversation, and he's thinking in his brain, wow, I didn't know this guy knew English. But he walks away, and the other people in the group who did know both languages said, no, he wasn't. That the native man was not speaking English. You were speaking his dialect.
Mm.
And to me, that would be speaking in tongues. That lines up with the biblical example of speaking languages and sharing the gospel in other languages and praising and magnifying God in other languages that people recognize. And that's beautiful. And it could still happen today. I believe in miracles. So yeah, it could happen. But personally, what I experienced in Pentecostal churches was not that. It was what I would call glossolalia, which is just Paul DeLacy. People should look into him that want to study more into tongues. But he's researched tongues, I think, for over 20 years. And
what was the name again?
Paul DeLacy.
Paul DeLacy.
I'm pretty sure I had that right. If not, just look up linguists who studied tongues for decades.
Okay.
But anyways, studying tongues in great depth. And he says a lot of times what the modern tongue, whatever you want to call it, is just someone saying syllables from their mother tongue. So even if they knew like four languages, whatever they were raised in, they go back to that language and they're saying sounds that are native to their first language, but they're stringing those syllables together in long consecutive things. I don't know what to call it. So there's not word breaks. There's not sentence breaks. So when someone is, when they're trying to crack a code of an unknown language, when we're trying to figure out a language we've never heard before, they find a new people group in the jungle or whatnot, and we're trying to figure out their language, part of the process is looking for the word break and the sentence breaks, because those are going to be in every language. And then from there, linguists can kind of piece together They can find patterns and find words that repeat and try to figure out the language, like cracking a code. But anyways, all that to say, what's really interesting is glossolalia does not have those sentence and word breaks. So something's different. I personally do not think it is the biblical gift of tongues, especially once I realize how many non-Christian religions have speaking in tongues, and even atheists that speak in tongues. And when I listen to recordings of it, I realize that sounds exactly like what I grew up with. So I would lean more towards it being a psychological phenomenon. And I don't think it's of the devil. I do not think it's demonic. I think it's just human. I'm not really against it. I think maybe God can use it. I don't know. People tell me he can. And so I just take their word for it, and I'm not hostile against it. But I don't think it's the biblical gift.
Sure. Very good answer.
Emotional ride.
Yeah, it's very emotional.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.